I'm going to do a little recap, set some principles, and we'll go into our lesson tonight. In 1412, the Hebrews here, just after the Red Sea, or just after they left Egypt, and the 10th plague, in 1412, just before the Red Sea, the sons of Israel see the Egyptian chariots. And what is their attitude? What is their frame of mind? In 1412, "Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." That's an attitude. That's an attitude of them after many things they've seen in the plagues. Now in 1431, just after this complete destruction of the Egyptian chariots in the Red Sea, Israel says, "When Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in the servant Moses." What's the attitude now? Good attitude, great attitude. When they recognize the power and wisdom of God, protection of God, and His care for them as the people of God. Now in Exodus 15, one through 19, we saw the song of Moses. Excuse me, 1 through 19 saw the song of Moses. And what was that song about? Praise of God, wasn't it? Honor of God, recognizing the power of God, recognizing the salvation that God afforded them in the Red Sea. And then 15, 18, and 19, what was their attitude? "The Lord shall reign forever and ever." Reign means rule. Reign is rule. God's over things. So they're recognizing that now, okay, after the Red Sea. And in 5:19, "For the horses of Pharaoh with his chariots and the horsemen went into the sea, and the Lord brought back the water of the sea on them. The sons of Israel walked on dry land through the midst of the sea." So that's what they were believing. They believed that the Lord is in charge of forever. Now, 3 days after this song of Moses, which is our study tonight, begins, in Exodus 15:24, they had just traveled to Marah, where the water was bitter, right for 3 days after the Red Sea. Now, traveling with the direction and guidance of God, there come some waters that were bitter. And they said they couldn't drink it. And they're grumbling and complaining to Moses. Of course, God too. Mumbling and complaining already. So the water was made sweet by God in 1525. Of course, they cried to God and He did it. Now, in 1527, God then led them to another area, Elam. And here they were provided with much water, 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, plenty of shade. So life was good there for this 2 million plus people. So the back and forth of their emotions, of their attitudes. Now, in 16:1, "Now in the wilderness between Elam and Sinai," and just over a month since they've left Egypt. And they're traveling. And in 16:2 it says, "The whole congregation, the sons of Israel, grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness." Again, grumbling again. Seeing all these things that God has cared for them, protected them, guiding them. Grumbling again in the wilderness. And in 16:3, "The sons of Israel said to them,
Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill us, kill this whole assembly with hunger. So, how is their faith at this point? First of all, it's back and forth. But here they're getting more dramatic in their grumbling, in their complaining, in those things that doubting God. And even to this point, they want to go back. Back to what? Slavery? Bondage? Just have a full stomach. And again, neglecting all those promises that God had. Promises have been fulfilled. All the efforts of Moses, seeing what they saw happen to the Egyptians. We just want to fill our stomachs. So they have a faith problem, an attitude problem. Now, in 16:4 and 5, it says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instruction." In verse 5, 16:5, "On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So this is a synopsis here. Synopsis of something God's going to provide. Something as a result of the grumbling that they've had, the complaining they've had. We want to go back. These many people, these people of promise, the ones here are the special, special people of God. All this is done for them. So now God has established some food for them. And what is this food?
Manna.
Right? Now, what's interesting here is if we go down to Exodus 16, 32, 35, they got the manna, they've ate it, that sort of thing, and they've established another day, haven't they, after this? Another day where they can have, in addition to the bread, that's a day of rest. And in reference to that, in 16:32 and 35, they say, "Then Moses said, This is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer fill of it be kept throughout your generations, that they may see the bread that I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out from the land of Egypt." Moses said to Aaron, "Take a jar and put an omer fill of manna in it and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept." And verse 35, "The sons of Israel ate this manna 40 years, 40 years, as a memorial until they came to the inhabited land. They ate the manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan." God provided. God provided. And here's a constant remember of the Exodus, and in this manna that they provided, they were to get it each morning, dutifully do that. And then, of course, they gathered twice as much on the sixth day of the week, which would accomplish the seventh day. And as you can read through that, you can see that if they disobeyed that, the manna would not be edible. Not be edible. And we're all familiar with that about the manna. Now, and again, as that last part I just read, 32 through 35, it's more than that. They're going to keep a pot of that forever, or at least till they get land of Canaan, to remember. And like we've said in the past, so many of these rituals to go through, so many of these things that they're instructed to do on a yearly basis, okay, or weekly basis, or whatever it is, those things help them to remember, to remember. And the main thing that they remember in all this is that they were not part of that death of the firstborn, were they? They were part and parcel the reason why the 10 plagues, the Exodus that they're going through now. And also the Red Sea, which we talked about the Song of Moses. That Red Sea deaths were for these people. And of course, they've got a faith problem. And we mentioned a minute ago about testing. And in 16, 19 through 20, even with this manna that they received with those clean instructions, good instructions, but even with that, they disobey. In 16, 19, and 20, Moses said to them, "Let no man leave any of it until morning." But they did not listen to Moses. And some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul, and Moses was angry with them. And rightly so, over and over and over. Just do what I say. Because what I say is from the Lord. The Lord of the plagues, the Lord of creation, Lord of judgment, the one who is with you day by day now, guiding you, that Lord. Just do what I say. Even on something like this, they like to disobey. And also in 16, 27 and 28, "And it came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions?'" How long? I love you. I've done these things for you. Just listen to my commandments and my instructions. Now, is all this a test? Yes, it is, isn't it? Okay? These items they're with and no drink, no water. Listen to me when I talk to you about the manna that I'm feeding you in. They're all a test. And what is this test of? Just the meeting we just finished. The meeting we just finished. Faith. And the faith in that is with tangible evidence that he's given them in the past. He's given them now. Even when he comes back and brings them water, when he brings them bread, and he also brought them quail, brings them those things, that is a test of faith. And what's the object of all of these tests? They're not pass-fail. Okay? But these tests do what? What do they do in the long run? Now, we've got many more years ahead of us here. But when they eventually enter Canaan, they could have went straight to Canaan, but they didn't. Okay? God could have cleared the way for them of all the tribes and disruptions they could have had. Could have fed them all ahead really quick to Canaan. But what's the process? What's the reason here for them to have these tests? See if they would obey. Call it maturity. Call it maturity. Would they obey? Because God's got a lot in store for them. Also, who else was being matured along the way? Moses. Okay? He's got a hard deal.
Well, he knew, God knew that they weren't ready for everything that was going to happen once they got there.
Yeah. And we're seeing evidence of that now, right in the initial month. Okay? We can see that even with those things fresh in our mind, not just, you know, a few things here and there, inconveniences, but we're talking death and destruction. I'm in the most powerful country. Not to mention the coming to the Red Sea. And those death and destruction, which they saw, we mentioned that, they saw it happen. But they swing back and forth. And, yes, sir?
They saw a pillar of fire by night.
Sure. These are written for us, say, to believe. And even beyond Nick, the extension there is, here's the Son of Man who came, tempted his entire life, the details of that, who he influenced, what he said. We have all of that record. Not incomplete, somewhat, as they had in the first century, but we have it for us. And where is our faith? Where is our faith? When we're tempted each day, when we have those feelings of doubt, when we feel that we're not, God's not with us, okay? Those sort of things are things that we need to look into and to consider too when we walk daily. It's something to wrap your head around sometimes. You know, the great movement they had, the great death they had, and the great faith they needed in this Lord. And again, we extend that to his beloved Son, only begotten Son. Now, yes, ma'am. Do we have rebellious hearts? Yes. Okay. So it's things that we can see by example. God's patient, but God judges. God's long-suffering, but he judges. God has given us blessings. He gave them blessings. And those sort of things we have to understand also as we travel through this life. We've got a God that wants us to be saved. He wants everyone to be saved. But there are judgments to be had. There are principles to be adhered to. There's doctrine that needs to be lived. And that goes the idea of how we treat our neighbors, how we treat those things from the Lord Almighty. So, principles that we can see, yes. Now, divert a little bit here. There are some things that I may want to look at here. Back to the Song of Moses in Exodus 15. There are truths scattered all through these chapters. And I move through that one a little faster. We'll get to the questions in a moment. But we talk about Moses' family. And in Exodus 15, 20 and 21, interesting points. He there did Song of Moses, great praise, great power, recognizing purely the what happened at the Red Sea and what they should live. They should live their lives as a result of that. And in 15, 20 and 21, Miriam, the prophetess, Aaron's sister, took the thimble in her hand, and all the women went out after her with thimbles and with dancing. Miriam answered them, "Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and his rider he has hurled into the sea." Two verses. But it's interesting about Miriam. When was the last time we heard about Miriam? Putting Moses in a basket, say? Okay. Good deed. Of course, she followed that up. But here, Miriam is a prophetess. Miriam's a prophetess. And it's interesting here, was that what she sang there, part of the prophet, or refrain that Moses wrote? Whatever. But the point is, what's interesting about that, in Micah 6:4, it says, from the prophet of God, talking about this instance in Egypt, it says, "Indeed, I brought you up from the land of Egypt and ransomed you from the house of slavery." Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Even many, many, many years later, this is still a thing to think about, okay? The Exodus brought you out of slavery. These things are all these mileposts concerning slavery. "And I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam."
So just a thought there to deal with Miriam in her own way, and recognized here by a prophet that she had those qualities with her and her status. So just a side point there about Miriam. We talked somewhat about in 1526. Where God here is a pretty strong statement in 1526, Exodus 1526. After he's talked about statutes and regulations and he's testing them, and you need to listen to my statutes, my commandments, and 1526, a good overall test for their future actions. And he said, if you will give earnest heed, talking to these sons of Israel, talk to them, warning them. Listen, we're not playing a game here. This is why I want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to my prophets, because they are my mouthpieces. And 1526, he said, if you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, okay, earnest heed, you can hear and you can heed, action, and do what is right in his sight. Yes, do what is right. What's right is what he's commanded. What's right is what's good for you. What's right is to listen to the prophet. And give ear to his commandments and keep his statutes. Now, look at all that. I mean, that's obedience. Can we say that? Yes. Okay. Listen. Why do you grumble? Why do you not trust? Why do you not believe? Why do you not have the growing, maturing faith that you need? Why don't you? And his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer. Now, if they've just seen this, yes, sir. If they've just seen this, and he's threatening them with the plagues, okay, some parts of those, and he's getting serious about this, listen to me, listen to my prophets, and if I need to heal, I'll heal. But I have the power to do that. I have the power for the diseases, and I have the power to heal. And again, that could have been boils, it could have been swarms, it could have been a lot of things. And we see in our, not it won't be in this course, but it'll be in future travels in the wilderness, did he not exact death on those who went to believe in idolatry? Those who didn't obey, those sort of things that showed distrust in God, a great lack of faith, things he had warned them about. You know, like we saw in the plagues, there was many times they warned the Pharaoh. Many times they warned him. Stay on the course. Stay on the course. Listen to what's good for you. Repent and believe. So it's an interesting point there of that recap of that. And also, in we saw in 1525, he's tested them. And then also in 1604, the word test comes up again. You don't test them. And we talked about that a moment, that the idea, he wants them to mature. He wants them to realize this is a God that, man, you haven't seen him. You haven't really been in his presence. You haven't, for centuries. You've seen the writings, you've heard the promises, maybe. You've been associated with idolatry. Maybe you come to trust the idolatry. But those sort of things, you need to clear your mind. You need to understand that I am the Lord, and I'm here to take care of you, to lead you into the promised land, to fulfill the promises. And it would be a hard transition. For generations have been that way. So that's why he's patient with them. Patient with them, okay? But firm, okay? But firm. Any questions? I think the principle's laid out there. Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah, when we talk about the Sabbath, let's see.
I got it coming up on point five here. Okay? But the Sabbath is a point of rest. Now, you heard it in the Genesis letter in the beginning where God rested on the seventh day. Well, who rested? God rested. Adam and Eve didn't rest. But here we come up to the Sabbath as a point to recognize and a point to understand why he's doing it now. Why rest? And let's go ahead and go to Deuteronomy 5:15. Again, we talk about these observances to go through, and I go back to the same word, remember, remember, remember. And Deuteronomy 5:15, and you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. That's the power of God. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. And again, that's among others. But the point is, why? So that you remember. Remember that I brought you out. I brought you out of this bondage, and with the power that I have and the wisdom that I have. And that's the sort of thing when they were into the Sabbath day. When they were into the Sabbath day, they collected, of course, their manna, okay, on the sixth day. But they would do no work. Do no work on Saturday, I'll call it. Do no work. And nothing to occupy their mind other than thinking about, remembering what God did for them. What God did for them. And it's good sometimes, okay, for us today to think about, put time aside, I guess, to think about remembering. Maybe in a long period, okay, here was a whole day where they're really restricting their movements. And for us to think about, among all the things we do in life, think about the great blessings we have, the great advocate we have with the Father. The eternity that can be ours. So it's a hard thing to do, but we need to control our mind and think about those things. And again, this instructs us, okay, for these people at this time to remember them. And remember the rest of their travels, the rest of their time, the rest of their nations that they put together and lost and back and forth, and the prophets that went to them. Prophets from here to John the Baptist to Christ. What do they always want? Come back. Stay true. Listen to the commandments and the ordinances and statutes. Remember. Remember the Exodus. Remember the Exodus. And those things were to build faith, maintain faith. Again, we see the Old Testament always exposed to idolatry, always brought into countries that cross-married, that had idolatry. And I guess among a lot of things you can talk about, that idolatry was the main one, really the main one that God was really concerned with. Because after all, you're putting another so-called deity in front of him or making him equal with him. And could not stand that because it's untrue, untrue. And where's the power of those idols? Nowhere. Whatever man can imagine or get lucky with. What that was. But God's miracles, God's power was shown without question. Okay? Things that could not happen and would not happen again. So those are things that we can base our faith on today, and again for them as they traveled through that. The era from this time to Christ's time? Yeah. Okay? Did they develop their own idols among their own people? People idols. Did they divert from Christ with their own man-made commandments, I guess you'd say? Yes, they did. Sometimes you can get so settled in what you do, so settled that you have this inner feeling that you can change things. Yes, I can hedge on that. Yes, I have that commandment, but I can hedge on that. And so those are things that he warned against back here and also for us today. So it's just a matter of attitude. And again, everything boils down to faith. Everything boils down to faith. All right. We talked somewhat about testing, and we saw that in 15 and 16. And what Moses really wanted them and God wanted them to do was to get the Egyptian ways out of them, get it out of their mind, and put those things of the Lord in their mind. Because after all, what controls our actions? Our mind, our attitude, our faith, and whatever it is. So that's the things that God wanted to do. And again, he was patient with them, but stern. Warning? Yes. Yes. Was it hard on Moses? Yes. Did Moses learn and develop? Yes. So everyone was learning and gathering greater faith at that time. And I mentioned a while ago in Exodus 16, 12, and 13, they complained about no meat, no bread, okay? You're not taking care of us. You've been doing it for months and months, all right? So God gave them some meat, brought them some quail for that. Again, another great miracle. Great miracle for them. And quail was not a trash bird. Quail was a delicacy. Quail was good eating. And they had it stacked up on the ground for them. So those things that God provided them in instant things, and again, like the cloud and the fire, was with them day to day. Those sort of things. God didn't leave them alone. Now, anything else on that? All right. Let's look at questions on page 31. If you've taken the time, we won't do it here, but if you take the time to go through each of those adjectives and images of God painted in that song of Moses, you're going to say, boy, this is a people here that really understood the power of God. This is a people here that understood the grace of God. It's a people that really, really esteemed the Lord and honored him. Then they flip around, don't they, a few days later. And you wonder about that, but in 18 of those 21 verses, you can see that he was highly exalted. The words they used, the words they sang. You know, Moses may have composed this, and he did, but the point is they sang it with joy. They sang it with thanksgiving. They sang it with great faith. So that's things for us to think about, too, when we sing. Think about the words. Think about the things we're saying. And isn't that something we're saying to each other? Yes. But we're also saying it to Christ, aren't we? The Lord. We're saying it to him also when we sing. So it's things to consider in life now. Okay? And song of praise. And in question 4, compare the song of Moses with the song of the Lamb, Revelation 15:3. And what you find is, even though it's a much shorter song in the Revelation letter, in 15:3, it basically does the same thing. Basically the same thing. So it talks about the great power of God, that he's got the best of motives, the best of motives for them then and for us today and those in the first century. Best of motives for us. Wants us to be with him eternally. And that his rule is everywhere, like we saw rule forever. And that, relating that his actions are righteous. His actions are right, okay, if you listen. And again, there's a relation there to the Lamb of God, which you can see in the sacrifices is that perfect, unblemished Lamb of God, Christ, Jesus of Nazareth. So there's a great praise there, which is back, how many years? 1500 B.C. was Moses. So all these years, okay, the association of the Lamb of God, the association of praise must still continue with the people of God. People of God. And the same thing applies today. Here we are plus 2000. Yes, sir. Anything? Okay. All right. In chapter 16, how long did God provide when he did this manna and that sort of thing? How long did he provide this sustenance for his people in Joshua 5:12?
40 years.
All right? 40 years until they entered the land of Canaan. And again, for them to see that, to being in that bowl there, as a gold bowl, if you look in Hebrews' letter, and in that gold bowl of that manna, which they kept, okay, and did not go bad, and that manna was to remind them of the Exodus. And again, so many of their festivals and that sort of thing reminded them also of the Exodus. But those things are remembering, keeps our faith strong. And it also keeps us to go back to the details. If we celebrate Christ, okay, and his resurrection, his death, and the things that benefit us today because of that, do we go back and look in the Gospels on occasion? More often than occasion, to refresh our mind on what went on during that time. The Passion Week, if you want to call it. Do we not reread that, get it in our minds, bring it to the front of our minds, all right? Instead of just a faint thing that we read once. So those sort of things we need to reread and think about, all right? Again, bolsters our remembrance, bolsters our faith. Now, we went over the other items that they were tested. We know that. And at further considerations on the bottom there, this word they use, manna, what's the translation of that? What is it? Okay. And we hear things that they have some coriander seed or some honey mixed in or something. But apparently it has some taste to it. And also you could, you could cook it and that sort of thing. But it had a... apparently protein in it, okay, and carbohydrates and things that sustain them. You know, I don't know if you can stay on, one particular food for 40 years and still be healthy, all right? But those sort of things is God provided, and it was there each day. And again, each day, twice on Fridays, you pick it up. For how many years? 40 years, all right? That made you think about the Exodus, doesn't it? Think about your stomach, all right? Think about that. And again, even with that miracle every day, they still rebelled, didn't they, in the future, okay? Didn't trust God on the 10 spies and on and on. And many of them suffered for that. But it's a hard thing to build faith, okay, because of the testing that God has. And they weren't difficult instructions. And if you in John 6:26 and 36, this is a type, this manna. And what's the point there? That Jesus is a true bread out of heaven. And what did this bread in the Exodus, what did that provide for them?
Salvation.
From starvation? Yeah, hell, okay. It provided them the things that saved them, wasn't it? Save them. It's a great issue when you got a lot of people moving to food and water. It's a big deal. Just like armies. You can talk about armies moving. You know, they moved 500 troops. They moved 5,000 troops somewhere. But the support staff, you know, is 90% of it. 10% is in the field doing the combat. So support is a big deal. So to have that food available for them as they did, it was a great, great blessing they had. And again, reminded of it over and over. So
every day,
okay? And that's something us to think about too. Every day we need Christ's blood, don't we? Every day we need the salvation out of Christ, because we have doubts and we sin and we do things contrary to the law of Christ. Those sort of things we need to think about. So they're great pictures for us to think about. There's value in seeing what's in the Old Testament.
And you know, they were getting it every day from heaven. And in Deuteronomy 8, Moses
did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of God.
Yes.
So it was coming down from heaven, and of course Jesus uses this as the bread out of heaven to talk about that.
It's an interesting point. Way back when God gave him the manna, think he had in mind Christ? Yes. All right, all these pictures are there. All those things to remember. And so here he comes up to the New Testament, and he's going to convince these people that he is that bread from heaven. He is their salvation. And why couldn't they change? Why couldn't it? Stubbornness. Okay? And it's always been a problem, pride and stubbornness. And again, did the apostles, did Christ give them ample proof to change? Just like here, ample proof. Defying nature. Great miracles. Open miracles. So it's the same thing, okay? And again, all that's recorded for us today to believe. Now, and the Sabbath, we talked about that, the sign between God and Israel of the deliverance out of Egypt. And follow that. Now, if we want to go into our next chapters now, if we can. That'd be chapters 17 and 18. Okay, here they are traveling again. And they're getting close to Mount Sinai. Getting close to Mount Sinai. And in 17:1. Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin, according to the command of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Uh-oh, we're back to the problem with water, aren't we? Back to the water of provisions. We're back to the idea of giving those things that God has given them over and over in the past. And 17:2, they quarreled with Moses. Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? In 17:2 and 17:3, but the people thirsted there for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, why now have you brought us up from Egypt, back to Egypt again, to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do to these people? A little more and they will stone me. Then the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff, which you struck the Nile, and go. I'm going to read through 17:7. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He named that place Massah and Meribeth, because of the quarrel, sons of God, because they tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Is the Lord among us or not? They progressed, haven't they, in their murmuring and their quarreling. Where is he? What do you mean, where is he? He's provided for you. And all you can do is moan and groan. And here they're actually doubting the Lord, doubting Moses, even to the point of taking out, okay? Moses, this perception, it really extreme their views, their attitude. And, but what does God do? What does he do? Helps them out, doesn't he? Okay? Helps them out, even with this attitude. Now, it sure does. Okay? It surely does. And, interesting point here. This is the first time you've seen stoning, okay, in the scriptures. All right. Now, and from 17:8 forward, we're going to deal with a battle. Goes on, and then we'll go into Jethro. Now, one thing before the bell rings with Jethro, think about Jethro. And you see, that's a lot of verses concerning Jethro. A lot of verses. Think about Jethro with respect to his warnings to Moses. Think about him in respect to the good advice he gave Moses. Think about the delegation of responsibilities that Moses
took from the good wisdom of his father-in-law. And think about how that affected Moses for the things coming up. I mean, we got coming up the tabernacle, we got coming up the Ten Commandments, we got all these things coming up the next 40 years. Imagine if Moses had to do all this administrative things, settle little arguments. So look at it from that point, okay? From that point of the great advice Jethro gave him, all right? And extended his life, who knows, kept his judgment good. The point is, Jethro gave him good advice for the administration and the correct judgments and those sort of things that Moses concentrated on for the remainder of the time, which made, you know, with Bill's faith, if he could do that. Okay, thank you very much.